You're listening to the Creative Pep Talk Podcast. We help you build a thriving creative career. I'm your host, Andy J. Pizza. You can stay up to date with all things Creative Pep Talk by following me on Instagram at Andy J. Pizza. Let's jump into today's episode. This week's episode is sponsored by AstroPad. AstroPad is an app that turns your iPad into a professional graphics tablet for your Mac. It works with any Mac app, so you can use creative tools like Photoshop and Illustrator right on your iPad. Check out astropad.com to learn more. This week's episode is also brought to you by Wix.com. With Wix, the web is your playground. Start with a blank page and design your website in any layout you want. Work right on the web page with advanced features and sophisticated visual effects. You'll have the freedom to tell your story exactly the way that you envisioned it. Go to Wix.com/creativepep to get started today. That's Wix.com/creativepep. Wix, what will you create? Quick little announcement. Don't forget to go check out creativepeptalk.com/tour. We got two tour dates up there right now. We are going to be in LA next week. And by we, I mean me. March 14th and 15th in LA with Kathy Heller's Dreamtopia Workshop. You can go get a deal on creativepeptalk.com/tour. There might be some seats left. Go check it out. Love to see you there, LA and California people. Also, Creative Work Skill Camp. This is serious. There's going to be some, it's not an average conference. This is like workshop intensive, focused with the industry leaders, you know, real time with them and in a small group. I'll be doing a keynote, not a workshop, but go check it out at creativepeptalk.com/tour. You can get a deal there too. All right. Go check it. Bye. Today on the show, we have a serious treat for you. We have artist Susie Altman. She's an illustrator. She makes books, toys, little beautiful characters come to life in three dimensions. I'm a giant fan of her work. We have... You can go check out her stuff at SusieUltman.com or at Susie Altman, SusieUltman on Instagram. You're going to go want to follow her. Her work is, it's really cute, but it has so much spirit, so much soul, so much depth and heart. And the books that she made are a regular on our bedtime reading with my littlest. Her books have a lot of play involved, and we spend a lot of time with her books. I wanted to have Susie on, not only because I'm a huge fan, and she lives here in Columbus, Ohio, and so we got to meet in person, but because Susie has this zen about her. And if you guys have been following this podcast for the past year, you know that I've been really stressed out this past year. Juggling a lot of things, making a lot of big decisions, a lot of big opportunities, all kinds of good stuff, but really, really stressed. And when I started thinking about asking Susie to be on the podcast, I was instantly like, yes, I need to talk to her because I need to just ask her, how does she manage her work and her being a parent and just all the things she does and still have that zen and that heart and that center that she has whenever I interact with her. And so we get to that. We go through six things that help keep her zen, centered, and also so much more. We talk about some really personal things. We talk about just all kinds of stuff. You're gonna love it. I don't want to give away anymore, but it's going to be a two-parter because we talked for 2 hours. And man, I am so pumped for you to hear this. All right. You are going to love Susie if you don't already know her. If you already know her, I'm sure you already love her. Her work is incredible and she's incredible. Here she is, Susie Altman. One of the things that I was thinking about questions for you and what I wanted to talk to you about, I started to feel really excited because I feel like I need a pep talk from you.
Aww.
Because
I used to be a cheerleader. I can
basically that vibe that you just gave me. Yeah. That's what I wanted. because I feel like you have this Zen vibe.
Thank
and I
you.
Feel like I, the past year, mm-hmm. I would say past year, I've been stressed out of my mind. Which I've talked a little bit about on the podcast. And I don't really have any good solutions for it. I haven't figured it out. And so I was excited about talking to you because I think that you have so much more of a calm about you than I do.
Thank you.
So how do you do it? That's my first question.
How do I
question.
Do it? And I've had friends tell me that I have a Zen vibe. So I appreciate that. I'm not, the people closest to me know I have, you know, try and keep that in balance. And
but I'm sure it's not like that all the time.
No, it's definitely not like that all the time. I think part of it is practice, and part of it are things that I've stepped through in my life to kind of help keep other things in perspective so that I know what to let go of. And probably, I don't know how deep we want to get so quickly.
I know. I'm sorry that I thought a lot about whether I should start with like...
I think that that's important. You know, I think... In terms of, because it does go back a ways for me, because I was brought up in a household where we were always doing things. And I think the doing, while it's great and I'm a very organized person and I can accomplish a lot, at a certain point you can hit a wall with that.
Yeah.
And maybe you're not doing all the things you think you're doing the things you think you should be doing, but you're not enjoying the moments. And where I hit my wall was when my first marriage broke up.
Yeah.
And so...
let's do this.
Yeah.
Let's go. Because I, you know, one way of starting a podcast is tell us your story.
Yeah.
But I thought I would start with, you know, my deepest curiosity first.
I like that.
Let's go back to...
Yeah.
Let's see. Can you tell us a little bit about that doing childhood? And we'll work our way through to that.
Well, so there's another piece of me, too, which is that... when my marriage broke up, that's when I actually got my Chronicle. That's when I had met Lilla and I got my Chronicle job at the same time.
Okay.
So my and those things launched me into my career. So it was kind of finding that my space and my creativity and working through just understanding that I needed to, like, I would spend my days just sitting and like reflecting on where I was in that space and time, drawing and taking care of the kids and making sure they were moving forward and making sure I was moving forward. Yeah. So that space is when I first learned to just be present.
So I'm very curious about all this. I want to deep dive into it. Let's pretend like that little start is like, you know, at the start of a Shakespeare play where they tell you this is what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And then they go into it. That's what we'll just do. So we'll go back. Let's go through your story. Because I assumed that, you know, from just the little pieces that I picked up over the years and some research, that this isn't a thing that... It's not that interesting to talk to somebody about something that's just innate to them. Because you can't learn anything from there.
Yeah.
But I felt like that Zen and that intentionality came from a place of learning.
Yeah.
And so let's go back. Let's start all the way back to when you were a kid.
Yeah.
What did your parents do?
Okay. So my parents, my dad was a chemical engineer at Penn State University.
Right.
And he had that same career for his whole life.
Yeah.
And very much a problem solver. I have that side of his brain. So I love to problem solve. I'm also he's an absent-minded professor. I kind of got that side of him too, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And very creative in his own right. He loved woodworking. I would spend time in the wood shop with him. And then my mom, she had an education degree, but she was a painter. She loved baking and sewing. So I spent a ton of time with
making
her.
Making things.
Making.
Yeah.
And so I love making. Like that as a kid, when I was doing, like we were playing outside, we were in the woods. As soon as I could reach the counter, I was baking with my mom. I was in the wood shop with my dad.
Yeah.
Play-Doh, like anything I could make, anything I could get my hands on, I was making. And that really, I danced. I would choreograph like routines with my sister. but just that space for me became like the space that I felt the most quiet and comfortable and comforted.
Yeah.
Was when I was making. I could get just lost in that world.
Even when you were little.
Even and when
where,
I was little.
Where were you living?
We're in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's teaching at Penn State.
Yeah. So my and my parents, they were just, I think for them that was their space too. And we didn't have, you know, Netflix or a million channels. So on the weekends, my, you know, we were raking, or my dad was doing, you know, making, you know, projects, and we had a couple channels on TV, and I would watch, you know, on Sundays I'd watch, I love stop motion animation. I'd watch like old monster movies and then try and like make little things myself. And
would you like, were you making with the camera? Or just you're making
stuff?
No, just
in my mind. Yeah, like I'd get like a shoebox and like do little like cut paper things, you know? And of course it was all like happening, you know, in my head.
That's awesome.
So that was like the early formation. And in their doing, which was great, they loved to travel. So every break we were, and State College is very much, it's in the middle of the state and it's very isolated. The university's there, so we would get like sports and stuff, but not a lot of, like, just very homogenous and very isolated. And my dad grew up in Chicago, so my parents loved to travel. So we would go to D.C. and go to museums, and that was great. So we'd see a lot, and we'd do a lot.
They'd schedule out all lots of your time. Is that what you're saying? Or you just action, just doing things?
Just doing a lot. Yeah. So I grew up with that, and it's great. I think it's wonderful to be very active and to be doing a lot of things.
Yeah.
But I think it's really what I've come to learn as I've grown up. It's important to have that downtime too, and especially these days when there is like so much around you, so much input.
Yeah. So how did you get on the path of going from that childhood to design or whatever?
So I, you know, they did at that time, like with, I don't know if it was at that time, but my parents didn't really know anything about graphic design. I went to Penn State undergrad. Started in accounting. I'm like, I'm good with numbers. I'll
my
do numbers.
My dad has an MBA from Penn State.
Does he?
Yeah.
So many Penn students. And I thought, I had taken like graphic design classes in high school and like loved it. And my teacher was really supportive, but I don't think my family knew what to do with it. My parents weren't discouraging me to be creative, but I don't think they knew there was any type of career in it. So I tried doing accounting for about a year and a half, and I was miserable. I actually failed my econ class, and I had never failed a class before. My parents were very kind and like, what's wrong? Like, you've never done this poorly. And I just said, I'm really unhappy.
Yeah.
So I found my way to the graphic design program at Penn State, and that was my undergrad career. And then after a couple of years out professionally, I felt like there was something more creatively that I needed to find. So I went and did graduate work at CalArts. At that time, like Emigre was coming out and Reagan, and there was all this stuff coming out of the West Coast.
Was it all coming out of CalArts or around there?
Well, there was Cranbrook that was generating all, like a lot of the people that were generating all of that like typography and postmodernist graphic design work. Yeah. And that was somewhat Midwest and then also West
Coast.
That's
like Michigan, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I was like, oh my God, like that's like, I the modernist thing for me, I was like, I could make it work, but it didn't really feel like me. It was too constrained. I think it's because there was an artist inside of me. I think I wasn't a graphic designer.
I think, you know, I spent a lot of, this is a complete aside and I don't want to derail us too much, but I went to school for graphic design. You know, I think that graphic design is, I always say it's like the trick to your parents where to you it sounds like art, but to them it sounds almost like engineering.
Yeah, like it's like, well, it's a viable career path. Yeah. Like you can get a job, you can
I was stifled by it.
Like
And especially modernism, which was, again, I studied in England and there was a resurgence of modernism. It was around like Helvetica documentary series, like all that kind of stuff. So I feel like this obsession with like grids and kerning and all that's in, you know, minimalism is the opposite of me.
I mean, I'm glad that I understand it.
Yes.
But I couldn't live in it. So when I went out to CalArts, I took, like the first year I didn't even go on the computer. I would just like cut up type and make these posters. And I, looking back now, I realize I was illustrating. Mm. But a lot of the people there were. Like they're making up typefaces that they were legible, but they're basically illustrating. And I got
so is this what, sorry to interrupt, but yeah. This is like, is it David Carson, Ray Gunn?
Yeah.
That kind of stuff. And that's the thing that made design more illustrative. Is that
yes.
what you're kind of saying?
Yeah. Okay. So, and then I got like, I took design theory classes and like all this stuff that was like, oh my God, like, you know, whereas undergrad, what blew my mind was like, I took my first feminist classes and I'm like, oh my God, there were women in history. Yeah. Cause I hadn't learned that in high school. Yeah. So in college, that was that. And so then when I got to graduate school, it was like that illustrative piece. And then also hearing about like design theory and like appropriation, because postmodernism, they were like really discussing like, what does it mean to appropriate and reappropriate, which is now like coming back like to haunt everyone with the whole like
cultural appropriation.
Yeah, all that stuff. Yeah. And actually like digging into what does this mean if we do it and how do we do it well and all this. So, which is nice because I think when I look at how, I just feel like I have, when I look at things on Instagram and people just reasons, I can look at it with a
macro
an eye with something, you know, just having that education.
Yeah.
That's kind of a whole aside. That's another conversation. But anyway, so I had that, and then moved back to the East Coast and attempted to open a design studio with my ex-husband and another partner, and that lasted for a couple of years and was a great education in like business and working with people. And then we moved out to Portland and got jobs at Nike and Adidas. Learned about apparel. Like, I'd already fell in love with the West Coast, so Portland just pushed me over the edge. Yeah. I'm like, West Coast.
You like Portland? I feel like it's like Sophie's never been. I have been.
Yeah.
But she's very like, because it looks like England and America smashed, because it's like a British climate.
Yeah, about it that way. I'm an East Coast person. I was born East Coast, but I'm definitely like a West Coast
vibe.
Soul.
Yeah.
Or maybe European. I'm just not quite like an East Coaster.
Yeah, I'm not. Yeah, I agree.
So we lived there, and then he was given the opportunity to get a job with Nike HQ in Amsterdam. And I'm like,
yeah. That's awesome. That's amazing.
So we moved there for 3 years.
So it sounds like, real quick, just because I want to point out something.
Yeah.
I love this idea. I think, obviously, if you've listened to the podcast more than once, you know that I'm obsessed with the hero's journey to a fault.
Yeah.
I love the idea of, you know, every journey is gathering an elixir of some kind.
Yeah.
And kind of being mindful of when you look back in your past and you start saying, well, the elixir from that journey was this, and from that journey was this, that it gives you hope and purpose in the current journey. Because you know, okay, I'm not going to understand what I'm getting from this season of my life, but I know that I'm getting something. If I'm on the path, I'm getting something. And you talk about, you kind of just did that, because you talk about undergrad.
Yeah.
You got this. What did you say you got at undergrad?
Well, I got a better understanding of, like, as a woman, my place in the world.
Right.
And I got
like
a broader. Yes.
Yeah.
And I got a design degree.
Yep.
Which was really important because I
needed. And then you went to CalArts and you got illustration.
Yeah.
You started to get the seed of that.
And I think I started understanding who I was creatively. Right. But I don't think I knew that until later.
And so
I knew it was different.
I wonder if you would say this or not, but when you worked at, you said apparel at Nike and Adidas thing. Do you think that was the seed of your applied work?
Yeah, well, that was a whole other thing because my sister moved out there.
Okay.
And we were like best friends and like sister soulmates and all this thing. And she got a job at Adidas. And this is when these companies had a lot of like money to like put towards their designers. And we got to travel on inspiration trips. So we went to LA, we went to New York. So we, like, twice a year, we would take these trips together, and we would stay in hotels, and we learned how to trend. I went to Chicago with somebody on the basketball team, and they would say, like, this. So the first time I went with somebody, and then I'd go by myself, and then Joanna and I were on a team, so we went together.
Yeah.
And we were the girls' team. So that's like my passion, and it was her passion too. So they were paying us to go for a week and say, go to LA and figure out what the trends are going to be for girls, because it was before, this was like right as the internet was starting to come in, like as an important piece for people trending.
Yeah.
So it was like playtime, and it was me understanding. I always had a good sense of trend, but this was like really understanding how to look for it.
Yeah.
And it was so much fun. It right. was the best. So then coming back and designing t-shirts was good. And, yeah. and it helped me understand the marketing piece of things. Like when you're in a room and you've got marketing there, you've got development there, you've got the design team there. And that's very important for me now. When I talk to people, when I talk to my clients, I know that when the feedback comes back, it's not just me in the room. Like it's not just my artwork in the room.
Yeah.
I'm sure you know too. Like there's all these other people involved.
Right.
So that's really helpful. Being in any corporate job to understand like where your place is, so that when you're working as an independent person, you can talk to your art director and you know have emotion for them when they have to come to you with feedback.
Yeah, that kind of empathy of like understanding their role means that you can more effectively communicate that to them and do it in a way that makes it fun to work with you.
And I always come at everything as
that's all right.
we're a team.
Yes.
Because if I want them to know that I'm part of their team.
Yeah.
Because I understand that they're going in as part of this bigger team. So that it gave me that piece too. But
which a big part of, you know, building a career is repeat clients at the basic.
Yeah.
You know, the basic level.
Yeah.
But relationships of like they like working with you. You know, you don't demand too much or expect too much, or you understand their side of it. But two things so as we go through this, we'll just, you know, ADHD this
thing.
What's
happening?
We'll go all over the place. That's the way we're going to do it. That's the way I do my podcast.
Okay, cool.
You know,
feels like a conversation, so it's
that's
very
the way
comfortable.
It needs to, yeah, exactly.
I like it.
But I want to talk about two things from that. I want to just camp out at the. You were at Nike, or you were
my ex was. Well, I was at Nike for a bit, but I was mainly at Adidas. I was at Adidas and then Nike and then Adidas. It's a small town, so people get around.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I've kind of noticed that. I want to talk about two things. One is you talking about spotting trends.
Yeah.
And actually, I was just talking with someone in our industry about, I think that the visual, and I want to hear what you think about this, but I feel as though in the creative world, music, film, whatever, everything, I feel like visual artists we have the most toxic culture in terms of understanding influence and trends and how things come about and how culturally relevant things happen and all that. I just feel like there's a, I think the world that you're a part of is probably pretty lovely in a way, at least from what outside. I'm sorry, I'm like making a judgment on that. But, you know, you and Sarah Walsh and my friends from that part of the industry seem to have a little bit healthier of a vibe in that world. But especially the further you get out to design or
you
editorial.
You mean like competitive-wise or
it's just like
trying to be...
If you think about trends or influence or mood boards or whatever it is, I feel as though you go into a company, one of these big companies, and they're all spotting trends. They have mood boards, they're doing that. And then on the individual level, if people see anybody influence each other or anybody jumping on a trend or whatever, there's just a lot of, at the very least, behind the scenes bitchiness, if not attacking people and whatever. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's so fascinating. So my little sister had gotten a job here when I was in Amsterdam at Abercrombie, which is like they're like trend freaking masters. So she would tell me about their trend stuff. So understanding that how they break stuff down into like looking at artists and who's out there and whatnot. What I do, there's definitely like, there are the trend books and the trend websites and all that happening. And I've been approached to be in them and I'm like, well, what does that mean? Are they gonna, people can call
rip
me?
You
like,
off
And I do see it all over Instagram with not just I know Danielle had written a wonderful article about copying people. Yeah. So not just that piece of looking at trends, but it's also like conceptually.
Yeah.
But I think what I've always been interested in, and I think this is where you see the difference between the people that are just following trend and the people that are up here
creating
like
trends.
You.
Yeah.
And
I think, I just wanted to make it clear that I think that there's this giant spectrum.
Yeah.
If you're thinking about it in terms of ethics, and I'm sure there are a lot of, I think there are probably a lot of brands that are trend bonkers and probably ethically crossing some lines.
I see what you're saying.
And then also, there are artists on the other end of the spectrum that are like, nothing influences me. I'm above trend. I've never been influenced by a trend. You having both experiences, it seems like you would have just a really interesting, a lot of interesting things
to
say about
that. So I think
that
if you're out in the world, you're going to be influenced by the world.
I think so,
it's like next to impossible to not be influenced by what you're around.
I actually think it can be a great thing to be influenced
by. We live in a world with a lot of visual stuff, and if you're a visual person, you collect it. I have certain people. I remember I was with my husband, and I saw. I love Sana Anika.
Yeah,
love her.
Yeah, amazing.
And I was doing a project with the carousel, and she had drawn a carousel. I'm like,
I can't look at the carousel.
Because my brain, my brain's like a filing cabinet of images, and will create an imprint of it.
Yeah,
and whether I, especially with her work, whether I mean it or not, because we both break down stuff very geometrically.
Sure. Yeah.
So I'm like, I don't even want to see it, because I will unintentionally like just geometrically.
Let that seep in.
Yeah, and the thing is, I am so aware of geometry of things. I know how hard it is to create that balance that I don't even want to go there.
Yes.
Because even the simplest thing isn't that simple to draw.
Yes.
So I have been affected by that, and sometimes I don't look away. Sometimes I'm like just scrolling through, and it probably, you know, seeps through. And because we live in a world where there is so much more visual input, I think it's hard to not, even more so, to check yourself and make sure you're... Now, in terms of conceptual trends, I think that's an interesting one, because I will see somebody like draw... I see an Apple thing, you know, where like draw, like start drawing some new type of Apple, and then like 2 days later, you know, everyone on Instagram is drawing them. And I sort of have an issue with that because I feel like it's a lot harder for people to build a brand these days. Mm-hmm. And I feel for new artists because I do feel like it's much, much harder to build a clear brand when you have people seeing things that they get excited about and then think like not understanding what it means to just start, whether it's visually knocking them off or conceptually. And that was one of the reasons I went onto Instagram, was to have like a timeline of my brand to say this is who I am. Because I didn't do it for a long time. I was a late adopter. And then I thought, well, there are a couple of reasons I can do it for reach out, but also to just kind of show this timeline of who I am.
Yeah, that's good.
So people
just
understand
an authenticity
that.
Of,
yeah.
You know, one of the things, just as an example, is like, you know, my Nod project that eventually turned into my Invisible Things project is at least 10-year process.
Right.
And I think cataloging that shows there are people that have come along and been like, now I draw invisible things or whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and I do think that timeline shows, it's like, you're not in this for the long haul, and it doesn't come from an authentic place.
So, right. Yeah. And I just had a conversation with a friend about this the other day where somebody did something like hers, and it made me upset.
Sure.
And so you know, we were talking about it, and I said, well, at least with you, like, on your feed, like, you can see that you've been doing this for years and years and years.
Yeah.
I'm like, other people might not know that, but we know that.
Yep.
And so the two of us
it's a complicated subject, but that's why I ask you, because I think having been inside the beast of companies like Nike and Adidas and Abercrombie, you're going to see a different, totally different side, and then you're going to be around all these artists, and it's just interesting to me.
Yeah, I think good companies, they will make it their own. They actually use it as inspiration.
Yeah.
Land of Nod they hire artists that have their own they're no longer Land of Nod, and I think
Crate and Barrel kids or something.
I think Nike and Adidas I was so young at Adidas when I was doing that. I'm trying to think of, like, our graphics weren't that, they were so sporty, and we were looking at girls, we were doing girl stuff, so there wasn't a lot of, there wouldn't be really the same kind of thing that we're talking about. But sure. I really feel like Nike will hire the right people to do what they need them to do.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, there's like this middle echelon of companies that I won't name.
Yeah.
That I see it all the time where they just, you know, will
rip people off.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess, you know, I think for me, the reason I actively ask you about it is because I think our industry and creative industries and all creative industries need to be able to have talks about it in a nuanced way, because I think the trend is to, I shouldn't use that word because it's confusing it, but typically it's a very black and white thing. Like, I feel like, you know, but there's a difference between ripping people off and inspiration. And there's a, you know, you said these companies would use these trends as inspiration,
right?
And saying and making a judgment call on that's okay,
right?
Or where is it not okay? And so anyway, it's just good to hear. I just like hearing different artists' perspective because it's such a heated thing in a lot of parts of this creative industry.
Right. I mean, I think that you did one of the first coloring outline doodle books.
Yeah.
And you set a trend.
Yeah.
And you can be the proud owner of that, right. You know, of that thing. But
that's a great example because it's something that I feel some ownership in that.
You should.
But I didn't get a lot of, it launched a lot of things that I'm doing.
Right.
But I didn't get any money from it.
Right.
And, you know, and lots of people went on to make tons of money on it.
Right.
But it's okay with me.
Yeah. That's and okay I with think me. That's what, when you're in it for the long haul, I think that's kind of how you need to look at things.
And I also, I think I always look at, I find it easy to look at it from the eyes of the underdog or the new person who, I want them, or creativity flourishing.
Like, right.
I want that movement to happen. I want that, I'm glad that adult coloring books became a thing.
Yeah.
That's a cool thing.
Yeah.
And I didn't, it's okay if I didn't become a millionaire on it. Like, that's how I, or a thousandaire, whatever it would be. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
I have both sides as a creator who gets hurt when people rip me off.
Yeah.
And then as a person who just wants creativity to flourish.
Yeah.
I like, you know,
maybe,
I don't know.
Yeah, maybe that was a little different thing because that was like a something that you made that just kind of like set everyone on fire. People were like, oh my gosh, like this got people really excited. And then other types of that thing were made.
Yeah.
I just wish you got more recognition for doing that because like if there were a museum of like these things changed like publishing history because I feel like that happened. And then
that's
all of
funny.
A sudden it was like
it's
everyone, publishers like, we need coloring books.
Well, you know what's that? The better lesson is always listen to your wife. Because, and I've said this before, but I did that book and I thought it's because, you know, it's because it's this indie rock homage.
Yeah.
And that's what's cool about it.
Yeah.
And Sophie was like, you know, this is like when it came out.
Yeah.
I think there's something about this like adult coloring thing. And I was like, no, and so now I listen to everything that I don't, but I should.
Yeah.
I listen to her more than I used to. That's for sure. But yeah, that's totally true. But I guess for me, I just like, I feel like everybody wants to, like, there's a phrase I say a million times, which is every framework is a lie, but some are useful. And so our frameworks for parsing out what's okay and what's not, it's a spectrum of gray.
Right.
So we're delineating and chopping this up into like rules, but that's not what creativity is like. It's so much. There's a giant spectrum.
Yeah.
And so all these rules and ideas and everything that we categorize everything in are really useful, but it's also creativity is just messier and, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. And I think something that, you know, you obviously talk about on your podcast, especially by having creative people on, are people's stories. And I think that's what hurts me when I'm talking about like the Apple yeah. example when somebody creates some new apple and then 2 days later everyone on Instagram is
drawing that kind of apple. Yeah.
Yeah, because you don't know what that came from their story 100%. And where they are, might be going with it. And I don't know if that's, I think it's a couple of things. I think, I'm not sure what's happening in the education system with young artists. I also think there's this, and this goes back to what we're, this is talking about the slowing down thing and not yeah. doing all the time.
Yeah.
But everybody's, I think everybody, I know I'm expected to work a lot faster. It doesn't yeah. mean that I do.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean I answer every email yeah. in 2 minutes that I get, you yeah. know. But everybody, not everybody, sometimes people feel the need to post more or yeah. create more. And so if they're not having their own ideas, they may look to somebody else. And so I think just, you know, taking that pause to be like, what did this meant something to this person that created it? Have I ever seen this somewhere else? And if I haven't, what is, they might have a story behind it. I need to yeah. kind of respect that.
You know what's hard? Drawing pictures. Do you know what makes it easier? Do you know what makes drawing pictures easier and more fun and just better all around? Doing it on your iPad. And guess what I like to do? I like to use AstroPad. It's an app that turns your iPad into a graphics tablet, which just means it's something you can draw on and it shows up in the digital stratosphere on your iMac or your MacBook and your Photoshops and your Illustrators. And I use it. How about you use it? Try it at astropad.com/try, T-R-Y. Use promo code pizza, all caps, P-I-Z-Z-A, to get 10% off the studio version. I dare you. Huh. Yeah. What about Wix? What about them? What about our second sponsor? They're making the web more sophisticated. They're making it a playground. Get on your favorite playground equipment online. It's not really anything about playground equipment. Unless you make playground equipment, and then you can make it about that. You can go, Wix.com. I'm getting on to the point. Wix.com/creativepep to get started today. If you go to andyjpizza.com, that's my website. We made it with Wix. It's pretty cool. Go check it out. You can make a website. You can tinker around. You can move stuff around. You can make a little box of text and move it all over the place. Lots of freedom without having to know code. You can make something tailored specifically to your vibe with Wix. That's what I like about it. Go check it out, wix.com/creativepep, to get started today.
But if everybody's doing rainbows and unicorns, I mean, this is kind of where I get to a point, because sometimes I get so stubborn, I miss yeah. out on something right. that could be like meaningful to the overall culture.
Yeah.
Like I finally broke down and did unicorns, which are very, you know, important in my yeah. realm of, you know, my audience.
Your sector.
And, you yeah. know, clientele. Yeah. So, you know, my clients are like, thank you for doing unicorns. Yeah, but I fought it for a long time because yeah. you see it starting and then everyone's doing it. I'm like, I don't want to be everybody. Yeah. You know, I kind of push against that. So
This is what I mean by, that whole story is very complicated.
Yeah.
Everything you just said is very on all kinds of different sides. And one of the things you said that I find really interesting is, you know, you said, I don't know what's going on with the education system. I also have all this empathy for, like, I didn't go to an art school.
Yeah.
And I felt like I wasn't taught very much at all at the school
yeah.
I went to. I had some really good mentors.
Yeah.
But I don't feel like any of this was anything I learned. And I watched people go through that program
yeah.
and get burnt because they weren't taught properly.
Mm.
And so I look at people that, you know, saying, well, maybe the art schools aren't doing a good job. And then I think, well, that also puts a boundary to anybody that can't afford to go to art school.
You're correct.
And so
yeah.
they can't even learn. So they're going to do it wrong. Like
yeah.
they're going to, and I, that's why when someone gets torched online, I'm like, wait, let's,
yeah.
what can we, is, was there another way?
Yeah.
We could, because you don't know, like
yeah.
maybe they grew up in Iowa and
yeah.
they just started making stuff and they're watching unicorns are everywhere now.
Yeah.
So I'll make a unicorn.
Yeah.
And it just, I'm very sensitive
to
loving people.
No, that's a really kind way of looking at it, because everybody has a different story and a different way of coming at it. And when I went to undergrad, it was a state school. It was Penn State. So my first, I think, 2 years were all like general eds, you know, I had to take, like, which was great because I took some great courses, but I didn't get into graphic design until the last 2 years.
Right.
So that education was like a deep dive into graphic design.
Boot camp.
Just like designing. There wasn't any design history. There wasn't any design theory. I took art history classes to complete my art major, and those were fantastic. You know, I learned about, like, you know, the Renaissance and all that great stuff. But I didn't actually take a design history or design theory class, anything about, you know, what we're talking about here, which would be really helpful. So you are absolutely correct that you don't know where people are coming from.
Which is part of the reason why I ask those questions on this podcast, is because this is supposed to be a resource that helps democratize creative education.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's it. Okay. So we're way off on a tangent, which is great. I really enjoyed it. I hope that the listeners did. Okay, so I want to circle back and talk about, I wonder if also working at these companies where you're applying your stuff to three-dimensional objects, if that has a impact on what you do now. Because one of the most interesting things about your work to me is how seamlessly your flat illustrations turn into 3D objects.
It's crazy, isn't
it's amazing. I'm so jealous of it, only in a loving way.
Thank
you. I love all of your wooden toys and your books
that.
And it's so amazing. But do you feel like you picked up some of that?
I think it started with Play-Doh. I think it started at my friend Molly Aronson's house when her mom would like give us these jars of Play-Doh, and I would make little like hey, Molly, if you're listening, little like fruit baskets and stuff. I actually didn't do that much 3D work in the companies. It really didn't start until I was given the opportunity to work with Land of Nod.
Okay.
And I came in at Land of Nod. You know, Lila used to have a great quote. I think it's a quote that people have talked about. You might know. Like, life's a combination of like good luck, but then it's what you do with the luck.
Yeah.
So I had done a project with Land of Nod, and the next year they got bought by somebody. It was before they got bought by Crate & Barrel, and they were growing.
Mm-hmm.
And they decided that instead of bringing in other people's toys, they were going to do their own toy line. And they had to have like 300 SKUs by the end of the year. So they said,
What does that mean, SKUs?
SKUs, count number.
Okay.
Right. What does S stand for? It's like they had to have 300 toys developed by the end of the year. So not only did they have them designed, but they had to like find developers for it. They had to put it through kid testing. They had to do all this.
So because they were starting it.
Yeah.
And they were learning.
Yeah.
And were you benefiting from them not knowing too? So you're like learning at the same time?
So they're like, so do you have any ideas? And I'm like, you know, I'm like, sure, I have ideas.
By the way, that's a lesson. I am in a situation right now where I'm about to go to a meeting where I got a question like that. They're like, you got any of these kind of ideas? I'm like, I got a million. Like,
yeah.
Zero.
Right.
But anytime someone asks you that question, you say yes.
Yeah.
That's true.
So I was always like I told you, like I love to make, so I'm always making. And there was a cold day, and I had gone to Michael's and gotten these like sheets of just plain Shrinky Dink, and I was making them with my boys, who could care less about Shrinky Dink. They're like, Mom, what are you doing? But I'm like, look how cool, we make them big and we shrink them.
At first, I was thinking, wow, good job, like bending the gender stereotypes of Shrinky Dinks. But
they've done all sorts of things with me, and some of them take, and some of them don't.
Right.
So you know, they did draw on some, but I took mine and I started punching holes in them, and I like put a string on them. I remember my mom was visiting; she took some pictures with me, and I'm like, okay, project one. I put them on the back of a thing. I'm like, Shrinky Dink jewelry collection. It was like something that they had on in their catalog. They brought it back. I did some dolls, but I was just like, yeah, here are ideas. I would just keep pitching ideas.
Yeah.
So that was basically my in to starting to develop product with them. And I think
did you end up thinking differently? Because that's the big thing for me, is that thinking 3D and thinking 2D, thinking of an editorial versus a toy is a big leap in, you know, you have to develop that craft to start
playing in the different way. So,
right.
But when I look at your kids' books or whatever, they are made with three dimensions in mind. You're playing almost more like a sculptor than an illustrator or something. Does that make sense?
Thanks. Yeah. I have a harder time doing what you're doing.
Right.
That's more challenging
for
me.
Just like pictures, like flat pictures, you mean?
Yeah, interestingly enough.
Yeah,
I mean, that's what I started doing. But once I started doing things in three dimension, my mind actually was like, this is your safe place. Like, this is something you understand.
I have to just highlight that, because that is, that little metal detector in your mind is so valuable.
Yeah.
And I do think noticing, that's the process of finding your gift, is like, where is that comfort zone? Because for me, I'm not gonna go to me, but that's a really interesting thing.
It was, and it's been, I have to admit, it's been kind of a scary path, because I was with my agent for many, many years. She got me started and they were wonderful, but I don't think when you know exactly what you wanna do, you're not really a good fit for an agency where you need to be doing everything.
Right.
And I felt like I needed to be responsible for this thing that was like, you need to do this thing.
Yeah.
And I was starting to kind of broaden the base of people that wanted to work with me like that. Mm. But at the same time, I wasn't like, I'm not, you know, it wasn't making me all my money. So, but I felt like I needed to, you know, and again, listening to your podcast, like really focus on that piece. So that's when I decided to just make the jump and say, I've got to go do this on my own. I either need to figure out how to really focus on the product, whether it's developing the books or more, you know, toys or like, you know, more my own product line, whatever that looks like. But this is where I do feel the best and the happiest and the safest, and my brain wants to do that. And I just need to kind of go for it. And I was lucky enough that my husband was like, yes, this is where you're happy. Like, I had the support from him.
So did you cut off things?
You mean other creative?
Yeah.
In a sense, yes, because every time I'm not working on pattern design, which is, I mean, that's kind of more the thing. Maybe it's not the editorial work that I'm talking about that you do. Like, I love, like, your poster work. Like, I love doing stuff like that. But in my, like, what I grew up with in illustration in the agency is doing patterns.
Yeah.
Because that's what gets you, like, a big, like, licensing agreements. And it can work across, like, broadly across many different companies. And so every time I'm working towards product development, I'm not working on patterns, which can get me other kinds of work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've been told I have like a very specific branded look. And that was something that was bad. I was told that for a while.
Right.
And I'm like, I think it's good.
Yeah.
And I think I need to just pushing that further. So I'd still do the patterns to help, you know, they're fun and they do bring in a different market. And you do them on the packaging. Yeah. I've been really lucky, fortunate to work with a client who's like, will you do the packaging? I'm like, sure. Cause then I get to tell more of the story.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I'm also very much a storyteller. So I like to tell as much of the story as possible. If I can do a book with characters, animated series, like the whole thing, and tell like the entire story, that's, you know, the dream.
Yeah.
So I do, in a sense, I am giving up. Like, I'm not turning, I don't necessarily have to turn clients away, but by not doing that work, I am saying no to certain things that can be income.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is hard.
I mean,
it's a little scary.
As you navigate your own, this is one thing that my dad is like one of my mentors, and he's a businessman.
Yeah.
And it's one of the things that took forever for him to help me with, is that he was never steering his ship. And so I was saying, like, things like that might not seem like a big deal, but when you're pushing for, like, what you create and the things you decide to do create the next reality that you're going to go into.
Yeah.
And so all of those little decisions matter.
They do.
And so I would explain to him, and he'd be like, I think just let it happen. I was like, no, I know. If I quit doing that, then that stuff's going to go away or whatever. Real quick, and this is just realness. What time do you have to leave?
2:20.
Okay. You have to leave at 2:20?
Yeah.
So we have tons of time.
Okay.
Because this could be a long episode.
Okay.
As long as
You're okay with
yeah,
that?
Yeah.
Because there's a bunch of stuff I want to get to. Okay.
Yes.
Real quick, let's go back to that because I want to tie that up before we move on. Yeah. But that's so interesting to me because I'm in a season right now where I feel like the water stirring of some of the new things that I'm doing feel like an awakening to me of like, I feel more comfortable making this than anything I've made in my adult life.
That's the best.
It is amazing, but it's scary.
It's scary as shit.
It is. You can swear. Yeah, you can swear as much as you want. But it is.
Yeah.
It's petrifying.
Because it's like you don't want to do, like you only want to do that thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, that's the other scary thing is that you are, and I start having these conversations with Sophie and I can see she's like scared. She's like, Andy?
Yeah.
We've seen this before. slow down. And I'm like, I'm not saying I'm going to like turn down, you know, all my clients or anything, or make any drastic moves. Yeah. But you start feeling that feeling. But I found that you have to follow it.
Yeah.
And it leads to, most of the time, it leads to the best stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I'm seeing it. I'm not 100% positive, but I think I'm seeing it. And when I started to, I was just like, I was at home and I started crying because you just don't know, like when you're on that path and you're making these decisions, like you're just following your intuition. I mean, I know I'm following a career that I have and a brand that I have and things I've built, but at the same time, I don't know if it's like
you
don't
really know
if it's working, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes you just don't know if it's really working.
Yeah.
And when you are making those decisions to stop working on certain things, to work on other things, it's just a fascinating trip. So
when you said you think you're seeing it,
yeah.
can you explain what you meant by that?
I think I'm starting to see like the clients that I want to be having that will support that like dream of mine to build that. I'm also trying, you know, making some conscious decisions about, you know, who I'm reaching out to and kind of letting go of other things for that secure feeling of, you know, I need this feedback.
And what made you cry? This is me being Terry Gross.
Terry
Gross will never let someone say that and not say, let's dig deeper into that. But that's just because I'm a very emo person and I just love soaking in an emotion like that. So I just, what you said, you started seeing these clients, they're kind of coming out of the woodwork to, you feel like you can build this thing that you've been dreaming of.
Yeah.
Can you just like, was it the toys and the like the 3D things?
Yeah.
And so, and what was that moment?
Because
what happened?
Because I felt like I think because for most of my life I've relied on other people to help me build something, and I think this is the first time I've been building something on my own. Not to say I don't get amazing support from the people in my life.
Yeah,
amazing.
Right.
I have the most amazing partner. He's so kind and so supportive. But making the decisions it's really hard making all the decisions all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And just trusting that it's going to go that direction. And I don't always trust myself.
Yeah.
Like even though I know my intuition is saying to do something. And it's hard to not follow the pack. I have peers that are doing things, and I have some really amazing peers, artist friends that appreciate me for me, and I appreciate them for them, and we're not all doing the same thing, and that's really wonderful to have that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you just kind of feel like I'm actually doing it, you know?
It was a feeling of, because like right now I'm in a like I told you, I'm in this feeling, I'm in this place where I have a bunch of opportunities and I'm making some new stuff that's basically, it's got the I have the most to gain from following that, but there's no guarantee. It's all like I'm taking a leap of faith, basically. And you're saying you started taking those leaps,
yeah,
and then you got the first fruits of it maybe this it's actually like working.
I think it's starting, yeah. I think it just takes a while.
Yeah. But that's that is like a hell of a creative journey. It is the creative journey of like betting on yourself.
Yeah.
Betting on your own ideas.
Yeah.
Trusting them and enough to put in the time. Like one of the things I keep talking about with Sophie, she's starting up her embroidery fiber art stuff
right.
again. And she has to do all this experimenting and she has to learn so much about dyeing and all these things she didn't know. Dyeing fabric, not just dyeing. Weird. Dyeing fabric. And she's like, man, it's so hard to do this when you don't know if it's going to pay off. And not in terms of money, just is it going to work? Is it leading to a thing? And I said, that's the thing of like, you only dig if you really believe there's gold. Like, in that moment, before you see the gold, is scary as hell.
Yeah.
But I guess that's the feeling of you saw a glimmer of the gold and you were like, oh, thank God. I was so scared.
That's amazing. I think, and it's that emotion. It's funny because, I was just talking to a friend of mine, another artist, the other day, and we were talking about that creative process of between diving in deep and like letting go to see what will happen, like what color will it die to,
yes,
and just letting go and being like totally free and being like, what the fuck ever, like I am just gonna like go for this. I want to do product design and I am just gonna put like everything behind it. And then the next day, being like, oh my God, what am I doing? Like, I have to go back to my old clients and make sure that in 6 months, we have some, like, money coming in.
Yeah.
But knowing that if I do that, I'm not, like, working towards this other goal.
Yeah.
So, and the thing is, that's kind of the balance of life in general.
Yeah.
And so I feel like it's very meta, like within every day when I'm creating, I'm working through life in general.
Yes.
So it's just like weird. It's this weird thing. So I'm
like
everyday therapy. It's just, you know, the process of creating and following your creative dreams.
Yes. Like you're saying, like you're working these same, you know, what
exercise.
You learn about following your gut and hearing your inner voice and being true to that and sticking at it and whatever, it shows up and is in practice in your art and it does the same in your life and you learn and they go back.
Because
and forth.
Honestly, we none of us know, it's that thing, none of us know what's going to happen tomorrow.
Right.
We have no idea. We just have the story in our head. So if I'm deciding I'm going to do product design, like, and I just say, this is what I'm doing. And I say the story in my head is like, it's going to be good and fine. Like, I don't, tomorrow, like, you know, something amazing could happen, like an amazing client call, or something really devastating could happen, like I could get into a car accident.
Yeah.
You just don't know.
No.
Or I could tell myself a story that we're not going to have any money for 6 months. So why really care about tomorrow? Just be in the day and follow whatever needs to happen. And then that, I really believe that energy creates the thing that you need to happen.
Yeah.
Not to sound hokey, but it does really work, because if you're in your best space, you're going to create your best work and people respond to that.
Yeah.
They just respond to your best work, and you can only do that if you're in your best space.
Yeah.
So if you can just not think about tomorrow and think about next week and 6 months, then it will all, you know. And that's the play between the just jumping in and doing it and not trying to, you know, fighting the reptilian brain of like,
Yeah. And it's a weird, that's a weird dance. It's a, you know, man, one of my problems is that I think like, I don't know. I go back and forth. I go back. I'm think, oh, there's a statement before that statement and a statement before that, because I have to prove each part of it. That sounds like a crazy person. But this idea that it goes back to not thinking dual or black and white. It's a spectrum.
Right.
And there's a lot of both and thinking, because you're saying, you know, in the next episode, I'm actually going to do.
I love that part of you, by the way. Oh, the both and,
thank you. Because I try to embrace it really, that kind of relative grasping of two different,
it's
contradictory
really
things.
Yeah, no, it's beautiful.
Thank you.
It's really, we need more of that in this world.
And the next episode, I'm going to do an episode that's one of my most woo-woo episodes I've ever done. But it's going to be followed up with one of my most materialist you know, because I think, like, I'm going to be talking about, you know, defining your desire and the power of that.
Yeah.
And then pair that with doing the work. So it's a very, anyway, you. That's
okay. Yeah. Oh gosh, that's so interesting. We talk about, yeah, we have lots of conversations about it too. Because you need to survive.
Right.
So you need to have like a roof over your head. And you'd rather do what you love to have the roof over your head.
Right.
But that needs to be balanced by being in the moment and enjoying whatever's going on, enjoying the people around you, the day, all that.
Because what you said, like, you had this vision of being a product designer and where you want to go, which is in the future.
Yeah.
And then, so that's in the future, but then a focus on the present day.
Mm-hmm.
So they're two different things. Working in tandem in different spaces. And I just was pointing out that, I mean, because one of the things, I'll talk a lot about, you know, putting a dot on the map, but then making sure that you're enjoying the process.
Yeah.
And so they're not, they can seem like opposing views. They're actually working together.
Yes, absolutely.
So what do you, this goes to the earlier question. I realize we're all over the place, but what I feel like we're having lots of great moments strung together through some kind of thing. But I'm loving it. It reminds me of my favorite episode. So I'm really, I'm having a great time.
Good.
I hope you are too. okay. So what I wanted to say was, I got way off. By explaining the weird off track, I got even more off track.
Gotcha.
But, okay. So I wanted to talk to you about how do you have practices that help you get into that best space for making? Because I think the more yourself you are and the more your work is like you.
Right.
And, you know, all of that, it actually requires, like, when I was 22, doing work at a random agency, you know, freelance work, it didn't matter what self I was.
Yeah.
I wasn't at my best self. Didn't matter. I could do the work. Didn't matter.
Yeah.
Now that I'm doing the podcast and my personal work and my stories and all that, it requires me being in my best energy.
Yeah, definitely.
And I have struggled to figure out how to do that consistently, especially as I'm really stressed.
Yeah.
And so I wonder what routines, practices, mindsets, anything.
Okay.
What do you have?
So I have my tool belt.
Yes.
Talked
Let's
about
see
doing
the
like a tool kid's
belt.
Tool belt.
Yeah.
So everybody's different. I definitely think, you know, consistency.
I like this jackhammer guy if you're hearing that person, but anyway.
So I'm pretty consistent with, we talked about
routine.
Breakfast. And
you have
that,
two, because that was on the test.
Two eggs.
We didn't tell
every
you.
Morning.
You have two soft boiled eggs every morning. And by the way, I think I'm going to steal it because
awesome.
I could definitely get down
with it. I highly recommend it. It came out of, I have migraines. And so I think it was about 8 years ago.
Too. Okay.
8 years ago, I changed up my diet. And one of the, I'm not, completely gluten-free, but I did take out a lot of carbohydrates. So in the morning, I used to not eat breakfast at all.
That's what I'm doing right now.
So now I start every morning with protein. It changed my life. Mm-hmm. It really did. Mm-hmm. It's very, very helpful. Also, my best time is in the morning. My best
Me
creative
too.
Time is in the morning.
Me too, 100%.
So if you've got some protein in you and you're working, like, I think that that's also really important to know when your best creative time is, and like access your, so you're already doing all that, access your neurons, like.
You have eggs on me. I don't have eggs yet.
Eggs, coffee if you need it.
Yeah. Do you do coffee?
Oh my gosh,
okay,
yeah.
Me too. I'm crazy.
Absolutely, yeah. I need that first morning coffee smells so good. I'm very much a proponent of meditation, but I think that looks different for everybody, and it looks different for me every day.
Yeah.
Something I've started instituting is my shower meditation, which I think I got from Eckhart Tolle when he was talking. I did a great course in town called Meditation for Everyday Living, and we just practice things like meditating while you're walking or doing dishes.
Yeah.
So this is just in the shower, like saying like, oh, I'm in the shower and the water's hitting me, and not thinking about the rest of the day. Mm-hmm. So basically trying to fit in meditation or just calmness wherever I can in the day. So if I know my day is going to be super busy, I make sure I meditate in the shower first thing when I wake up.
So far we have, because I love this kind of list. Yeah. One is like a healthy routine that's good for your mindset. Two is a self-awareness of your peak performance. So and that's big. That's huge. So knowing are you a morning person? When do you get that creative energy? Tapping into that. And then three so far is some kind of spiritual practice. I don't know if you'd consider meditation spiritual practice, but mental or mental health / spiritual practice of some kind.
And I think I find it helpful to keep that consistent too, because I have kids. So,
and consistency is a big thing.
Yeah. So when it's nice out, I love to go outside and meditate. So I usually do it like when after I pick them up from school, I get them home, I get them a snack, and then I go outside for like 20 minutes and it recharges me. I get to be in the sunshine and get some vitamin D. So I think for everybody, it's different. And like I said, for me, it's even different depending on the season or how much work I have. So, but I try to make sure that I do that. Something else that a therapist just suggested to me recently, my therapist, which I think has been an outstanding and very, very interesting practice, and I highly recommend this especially to all the moms out there, because I think women and guys, I don't want to keep guys out of this, but women need to take care of everybody else.
You don't have to worry about excluding men.
Okay. women need to take care of everybody else and put them below is you know,
it's a pretty stereotypical.
Yeah, well, and can be problematic.
Yeah.
So she just suggested to me to think about when I'm doing things for myself. So I can say, you're doing this for you, Susie. So what I'll do is, because it's so important to just do at least one thing a day for yourself. So even if it's like, oh, I'm going to take 10 minutes out and pick up the phone and call a friend, even during a busy day, like I'm doing this for me.
Yeah.
And claiming that time for myself on a busy day helps. It's made a huge difference, because I'm like, it makes me so happy. I've recognized myself in the day that it's like my time. Sometimes I'll be like, I'm going to go and sit in the bedroom for 15 minutes and everybody else can just, you know, do their thing. I don't have to announce it to them, but I'm like, I'm doing this for me. So
I like that better though. I like you going in the living room and telling your friends, I'm going to the bedroom and I'm doing this for me.
Yeah.
Like,
so
you can do that.
I think just making sure that every day you do something for yourself, even if it's really simple, but telling yourself that and reinforcing that you're worth it and that you're giving yourself that time, because we're all so busy, and you probably spend that amount of time on your phone looking through Instagram feed, and that's not really doing anything to give yourself any sort of like self-comfort or feedback or
That's really great too, because you know I'm planning this series and I'm going to talk about how vague intentions they rarely go somewhere, and B, even if they go somewhere, you don't have anything to realize that you've succeeded.
Yeah.
So you still don't feel like if you say, what do you want to do this year? Well, I want to make progress.
Yeah.
You might have made progress by the next year, but you won't know it because you didn't define it. So you say you might have done things for yourself throughout the day.
Right.
And not even realized it.
Right.
And you might go by the end of the day and be like, I'm not even doing anything for me.
Yeah.
Like
then you get upset with potentially your partner and your kids, and it just comes out in these other ways. So it's been really helpful to just,
That's so good.
So that's been good. And then the other thing is just making as many conscious decisions as I can in my life. And in terms of work, what that looks like is that I know what my week looks like. Like, I think most people, like we all do. I know what my week looks like. I know what the carpools look like with the kids. I know like what my partner can pick up, like where he can pick up the slack. We're a blended family. So we've got, you know, kids coming from the other house and then all that stuff. So if I have a big project coming in, you know, we sit and we talk about it and we say, like, what is this going to look like? What is this going to look like for grocery shopping? What is this going to look like for my evenings? How is this going to impact us as a family? And making a conscious decision. Yeah. And everything works like that. Because if we're not on board together and we're not, like, 100% Like, you know, if he doesn't feel like, you know, well, for the next 3 weeks, I'll do the grocery shopping and it's good. And I'm like, okay, we're both on board. There's not going to be any, like, by the end of 3 weeks, I did all the grocery shopping. I'm like, and I'm beat because I've been up till midnight every night. Like, we don't, yeah. There's not going to be any of that. So every decision is very conscious. And I try to do that with everything I take on, whether it's a job or meeting someone to do something. Like, what if I'm doing, it's just like the work thing. If you're doing one thing, you're taking away from something else. Yeah. So how does this look in my week? How's this gonna affect my energy? If it's bringing something positive, that's great.
You're,
if it's gonna stress me out,
your commitments, yeah. And yeah, making sure you're mindful about,
yeah,
what you're saying yes,
yeah,
to.
Yeah, and it doesn't always work perfectly. If I come home, if I go do something, I'm like, oh my God, why do that? I'm so stressed out. I'm like, okay, well, just make a note to yourself. Like, maybe you don't do that again.
Guys, we got an hour more of this, and we get into a bunch of other personal stuff, a bunch of other practical stuff, a lot of laughs, talking about ADHD and Asperger's and all kinds of stuff in the next episode. I can't wait for you to hear it. Tune in next week for part two. You won't regret it. No regrets. No regrets. Got it? Okay. Thank you, Susie, so much for being on the show. I could not be more excited about having you on the show, and I know that you're gonna have to come on and do a part three someday. Thank you, Susie. Go check out Susie on Instagram at Susie Altman. This is the part of the show where we give a little shout out to, well, before we give out the shout out, don't forget about creativepeptalk.com/tour. Go sign up if you're a California, LA person, especially if you're into music or writing, any creativity of all time. There's all different guests. It's not just illustration and design this time around. Go check it out, or go check out Skill Camp in Memphis in April. Okay, this is the part of the show where we give a little shout out to our patrons. We're on Patreon. I don't know if you know that. Patreon.com/creativepeptalk. This podcast is partially funded by you, the listener. Isn't that special? It is very special. And we appreciate you. We love you, patrons, and we see your comments, and we see your support, and it means a ton to us. And so I just want to go out of my way to give a shout out to people that put their money where their mouth is in terms of supporting the show. And so I like to give a little shout out. Here you go. Let's find one. I'm just going scrolling up and down randomly here. Where will we stop here? We stopped right there. It's Jason Hegland. Jason Hegland. Let's see. He's got a Twitter. Let's see who this person is. Hi, Jason. Thank you, Jason, for being such a kind soul and supporting the podcast with financial support. Jason can hear me typing. Let's go find this character. I think he's an illustrator. Is this good content? Jason Hegland. Go check it out. JasonHegland.com. Illustration. He helps bring stories to life using fun and authentic vibes. You know that is my vibe. Fun and authentic vibes. We're vibing right now. Go check it out. He's also got an Instagram at J Hegland, J-H-E-G-L-U-N-D. Go follow it. He's got a cool strawberry guy who's running on there. He's doing some good stuff. I'm pumped about it. Thank you, Jason, for backing the show. Husband, father, Portland native. That's who you are. I really appreciate you, bud. Thanks for doing that. And all thanks to Yoni Wolf and the band Y for our theme music. Thanks to Alex Sugg for editing and providing a soundtrack for this show. Thanks to all of you for listening. Stay tuned for part two with Susie next week. Speak soon. Stay pepped up. Weird inflection. I can't end on that note. Let me try it again. Until we speak again.
Until we speak again, stay pepped up.
Stay pepped up.